Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals, providing knowledge that is moving medicine forward. Here's Melanie Cole.
Welcome to UAB Medcast. I'm Melanie Cole, and today we're highlighting menopause and perimenopause management, updated guidelines for hormonal therapies, weight management strategies, and so much more. Joining me is Dr. Meenakshi Shukla. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at UAB Medicine, and she's the medical director of the Highlands Family Medicine Clinic. Dr. Shukla, thank you so much for being with us as we get into this topic, which is really just such a good topic. I'd like you to give us a little working definition of perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause for us to begin so we know what we're talking about here.
Hey, Melanie. Thank you so much, first of all, for having me today. And I think this topic is one of the topics which is very close to my heart. So that is why I love talking about it. So let's go to some definitions. So I think the way we like to think about perimenopause is essentially it's a transition phase before the final menstrual period when you'll see a lot of hormonal fluctuations, your cycles can start getting irregular. And that's the time when you'll start noticing symptoms like hot flashes, sleep issues, and mood changes. Menopause, on the other hand, usually is a retrospective diagnosis, which means that you should not have any periods for 12 consecutive months. And only after that, we tell that a woman is in the menopausal stage. Usually, the average age in the United States is about 51 years when most women will have menopause. Postmenopause is essentially everything after that. And, you know, the early postmenopausal years are when symptoms and physiological changes tends to be the most noticeable.
Well, thank you for that. So now we're clear. How have clinical guidelines for menopausal hormone therapy specifically evolved in the last couple of years, particularly regarding timing, dosing, formulation for perimenopause versus postmenopause? We're always sort of hearing varying information about hormone therapy. Clear a little bit of that up for us.
Yeah, I think in the last few years, we have basically shifted from one size fits all to a much more individualized approach, risk-based approach. We now recognize that hormone therapy is the most effective treatment for hot flashes and genitourinary symptoms. And for healthy women younger than 60 years or within 10 years of menopause, the benefit-risk profile is very favorable. So we talk about when to start, that's the timing. We also like to personalize, you know, the dosing, the route, formulations. Over the years now, we have various formulations available. We have oral routes, we have transdermal patches, we have topical creams, gels, and whatnot. So based on the patient risk profile, we decide what would be a favorable route to give to the patient. Again, now we have more lower systemic doses, which are widely accepted for vasomotor symptoms. Vaginal estrogen cream is a great option now for some of the genitourinary symptoms. And sometimes we might prefer even transdermal routes. So it really depends on what the patient risk profile is.
Well, so Dr. Shukla, there's always conversation about that window of opportunity for starting hormone replacement. Tell us a little bit about the science behind that in practical terms as you're speaking to fellow clinicians and how you even speak to patients about it, because patients have a lot of questions about risk. And as you said, the patient profile comes into play as we're personalizing this now. Tell us a little bit about why and when.
So, you know, I always tell my patients and even for my fellow clinician that timing matters. Because remember, estrogen interacts differently with a healthy, recently menopausal cardiovascular system than with the one that has more established atherosclerosis. So do remember, as you age, so do your blood vessels. So starting hormone therapy close to the time your period stops tends to carry a lower cardiovascular risk compared with starting many years later, because probably now you have more established atherosclerosis. It's not a heart disease preventing tool, again, to remember, right? Hormone therapy is not used to prevent heart disease, but for symptom control. And starting earlier will usually offer a safer and smoother benefit risk profile.
What about non-hormone replacement therapies? Dr. Shukla, how are you incorporating those into your practice these days as we think about, as you say, symptom management? There's metabolic shifts that are taking place, weight gain, bloating. I mean, there's all kinds of other things going on. Tell us about some of those non-hormone replacement therapies.
I think non-hormonal options are super important. They are first line for women who can't take hormone therapy or who don't want hormone therapy. You know, ultimately, it also depends on patient's preference and her choice. And I think they are great adjuncts when symptoms don't fully resolve. For hot flashes, we do have many options. Like we have some of the antidepressants. They are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. We have some of the newer agents like the neurokinin 3 antagonist. Veozah is a great option. The other thing, how do I use them in my practice? Obviously, if there is a contraindication for hormone therapy, I always like to discuss the non-hormonal options with my patients. Also, you know, sometimes if I can kill two birds with one stone, for example, if I see a patient has mood symptoms, has depression or anxiety, then starting an antidepressant makes complete sense that as it can help with both her menopausal symptoms and even her mood symptoms. So again, looking at that patient risk profile.
Well, so that makes a lot of sense. And as an additional adjunct, and we think of those metabolic changes, GLP-1 agonists are being used more than ever. In menopausal women, Dr. Shukla, when does that kind of pharmacologic support become appropriate and become something you start discussing?
I do feel in midlife, again, we all know that there are so many physiological changes, physical changes, which are happening because of aging and menopause. And that predisposes the woman to really a lot of weight gain. And we know that declining estrogen levels in the menopause leads to that increased abdominal and visceral fat. So I think that newer GLP-1 agonists really offer substantial weight loss and additional benefits such as improved metabolic health and reduced cardiovascular risk. So I think they should be used as an effective tool, but we do need to also consider the GI side effects. Like GI issues are a main thing with most of the GLP-1 medications. The other thing is, not forgetting the education about maintaining good protein intake, maintaining good strength training exercises. Those are all important for a healthy weight loss as well.
One of the things that happens to us, Dr. Shukla, is bone density. As we get older, we're losing certain percent per decade. How are the guidelines shifting for preserving that long-term cardiometabolic health, cognitive health, and mobility as far as bone density? When we think of the drugs that are out there, the medications, and the hormone replacement and what that's doing to help our bone density. Tell us a little bit about how that all works together now.
To be honest, now we are really reframing menopause as a key window to protect your long-term heart, brain, and mobility health. So it really boils down to aggressively managing your blood pressure, your cholesterol, and metabolic risk in midlife. So most of the time, what happens is, you know, you see that women are coming to a doctor's office when they are in the childbearing age, and then you see a gap of 10 to 20 years, right? And suddenly around the menopause, you will see that once they start having symptoms, they will start visiting the doctor's office again. And that's the key window which we are trying to utilize here, where we are really trying to, you know, aggressively manage all the comorbidities as well. It also means, as you said, for the bone density, how do we try to like help with that, right? Prioritizing resistance training for muscle imbalance. We all know that hormone therapy also helps in maintaining that bone density. Also supporting their cognitive health with sleep, social connections, vascular risk reduction. So menopause care, I think, is becoming much more holistic. It's not just about hot flashes, but it's really about lifelong function and quality of life, which I really try to stress to all my patients and fellow clinicians.
And I'd like to expand because it is shifting towards this whole body health and things that we run into as we enter perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, sleep disruption. You already mentioned depression and anxiety, and certainly that's pervasive for many people these days. But if you are menopausal, it certainly can be heightened. How do you work with your patients specifically on tools for stress reduction, for sleep disruption, because that's a big one as well, and evidence-based ways? You know, we talk about exercise. I'm an exercise physiologist. So this is something we've talked about for years and years, of exercise and bone density exercises and cardiovascular, but those other things that come into play, Dr. Shukla, with sleep and stress. What do you tell your patients about that?
To be honest, sleep and vasomotor symptoms are so closely linked. Night sweats often cause awakening, and that leads to poor sleep, and which often amplifies the symptom burden. That again is so closely linked with your mood, metabolic dysregulations. So often, to be honest, if we start treating the women's vasomotor symptoms, you see that they come back and they tell you that, hey, I know it was not a sleeping pill which you gave me, but I really feel that I'm getting better sleep. And to be honest, it was actually the vasomotor symptoms which got better, and that's why the patient was having a better quality of sleep. Again, talking about anxiety and stress reduction. So going back to our previous question where we talked about adjunct medications, so not thinking about or not trying to shy away from using our antidepressants if we feel that anxiety is really playing a big part and really affecting the quality of life. And I often start with realistic low burden tool like short breathing exercise, maybe a 10-minute wind down routine, brisk walks during the day. Also talking about other things like cutting down on the ultra processed foods, which really leads to increased calorie density, impairs your satiety, and again leads to that weight gain. So you can see how everything is so closely related and can really have an effect on your health overall.
Well, Dr. Shukla, you've given us a lot to think about and really let us know this evidence-based information about things as they're changing, because it really is a rapidly evolving field that you're in. So as we wrap up, what advice would you give clinicians who feel undertrained in menopause management? Because I think this is common, and it's certainly not the field for everyone. As women come to their physicians asking about risk factors for breast cancer if they start menopause and management and hormonal therapy, and what advice would you give them about learning to treat the woman as a whole person and not just those symptoms?
I always tell my fellow clinicians, even our resident physicians, students, learners, that start with the basics and build from there, right? Don't shy away. I think the first thing which we need to get ourselves comfortable with is asking women if they are having any of the menopausal symptoms, right? So the first thing you want to know whether your patient is having any symptoms. Feeling comfortable about talking about vasomotor symptoms. Getting comfortable with some of the non-hormonal options, right? I think most of the physicians probably feel way more comfortable with non-hormonal options compared to hormonal options. So even if you can start there and slowly and steadily build your knowledge gaps on starting hormone therapy, that might be helpful as well. Using simple shared decision scripts with your patients, talking about benefit and risk. I know you asked me regarding the breast cancer risk, right? Many women, I think, are afraid that, or there is just a thought that, hey, hormone therapy causes cancer, which is not true at all. So learning to talk about those benefit versus risk, looking at the patient risk profile, again, I would like to emphasize. And I think all these tools in your pocket will really help you to take care of your menopausal woman. And again, when there is a difficult case, not shying away from seeking guidance for someone who knows a little bit more on this topic. I always say that you don't need to be a menopause specialist to give great evidence-based care with empathy. I think we can all do it.
Wow, that was beautifully said. Dr. Shukla, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your incredible expertise on this topic. And for more information, please visit our website at uabmedicine.org/physician. That concludes this episode of UAB Medcast. I'm Melanie Cole.